November 16th, 2013, a SWAT from Pedro show. Quad for Pedro show here in Pedro, but not at the Love Grotto with Brother Matt, instead at Cornelius Project, which is the home of, well, the current home of the Joe Biza art show. What's it called?
It's called The Mind of Joe Biza.
The Mind, that's right. And the opening was, yeah, there's Joe Biza, my guest for today. Hi. Welcome aboard, Joe Biza. Oh, by the way, we started with the Song of the Underground Railroad by John Coltrane and Amagar by Sawako. Was it 2 weeks ago here, the opening?
I think so.
Because I went...
Two or three? Yeah, it's a couple of weeks ago.
I went away. Okay.
Yeah, the opening.
It was recent.
Yes.
And Hank was here, and Jack, and...
It's up to the 20th.
A lot of cats from your old days.
Yeah, it was great to see everyone. It's up till the 21st of December. That'll be the closing.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
We'll say this
there'll
again
be an
at
event,
the end of the show. But
an event then as well.
Yeah, come down here and see it. You can't really get a sense of it over the Watt from Pedro show. We can only tell you about it, dude. So
you can't see it on the radio.
That's right. Yeah. There's a helper man from Stooges who said when he was growing up, his parents made him listen to juggling over the radio. Yeah, can you imagine?
Listening to juggling.
Anyway, yeah, his name is Josh.
I don't know.
Poor guy. So until the 21st, you can come down here. What's the address? It's South Pacific 15.
It's 1417 South Pacific.
1417 South Pacific. So it's
Saturdays.
14
Saturdays,
to 15.
1 to 6.
1 to 6
Saturday, 1 to 6. So it's got what, 3 or 4 Saturdays left.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 4.
Maybe something 5. Like that.
Anyway, get down here if you can, people. If you can't, you're going to hear Joe Biza talk about it on the show here. Let's start from the beginning. When did you start doing art?
Probably
the earliest thing in your mind you can remember.
Let me think. Might have been junior high school or something. I went to Dotson Junior High in Pedro.
So did I.
Yeah, so we
so
would write.
A teenager or 12?
I started in 1964. Dotson was brand new, and they started bussing over the kids from
That's
Wilmington,
right.
And we'd be on the bus, you know, and my first time in junior high school, and they had the student store, and I remember these fountain pens they had, and it was kind of with a cartridge, you know, in those days, and had certain like different colors and stuff. So I got one of those, and I started. Yeah, just for school. But then I started messing around with it.
What do you mean, like art class?
No, it was like a fountain,
you
know.
Just for writing?
For writing, for class, yeah. So I sort of got into the ink by looking at that, you know, and I started doing little drawings all of a sudden with these fountain pens instead of, you know, just writing with them. Doing things like smearing them, drawing little figures and making them look like they're moving around and stuff. So I think that's when I started getting interested in art at that point. In that way, yeah.
On paper?
On paper.
Because I remember seeing a lot of stuff. That's where I first found out. I thought there was this lady named Wilma, or there were several of them.
Oh, Wilma's?
Because the Flintstones was this popular... It was actually a ripoff of the Honeymooners and made into a cartoon.
Right.
But I had no idea coming from Virginia.
That's the same thing happened with one of my teachers, my biology teacher or something. He says... He tells the class, because people write stuff on the walls. He goes, "Who's this Wilma? I see her name all over." And the class started laughing. You know, Wilma, that's Wilma's. What is that? You know, and then we had some of the kids explain that was what they call Wilmington, you know. But yeah,
actually,
I know
that was an interesting thing, the bussing thing, because I met cats I would have never met.
Yeah, it was great.
I know
I mean,
people
same
all
with me.
Bum out on it and stuff, but for me, I got to say,
it was
other
interesting.
People.
You know, I did. You know, what happened is I was in the early seventh grade there, and then the second half of the seventh grade, I wanted to transfer to Wilmington. It was Wilmington Junior High.
Oh, no.
Wilmington Junior High. I said, I want to go back
What's
to
that
Wilmington.
Called, Fleming?
It's called Wilmington Junior High.
Oh. What was Fleming?
That's on Torrance or Harbor City or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, so I went to that. And the kids from Wilmington said, "What, you're crazy? You're leaving us?" Because of a brand new school. Anyway, I went there, and then I realized I'd rather be back at Dotson because it was more varied, I guess, with the student population. So I had to talk my way back into going back to Dotson on the eighth grade, and when the eighth grade started, so
you
I did that.
You both Dotson.
Yeah, so
That's
we were there.
Part of Pedro.
It was a trip riding the bus. And one of my earliest memories on the bus is in 1964, I started Datsun and we rode the bus. And one day I'm on the bus and all the kids are all excited on the bus. Usually they don't even act that way, but they're talking about stuff like Beatles. I keep hearing this Beatles thing. And I go, what? Beatles? What? And I was sitting next to my friend Tom Crabb. And I said, what's this Beatles everyone's talking about? He said, oh, yeah, it's just some band that was on TV the other night. I said, why is everyone so excited about a band or something? Said, well, they look a little different, you know. What do you mean? Well, they're from England. He kept trying to explain in this kind of way, you know. And I said, I don't understand. He said, well, they wear these kind of suits without collars. And I still didn't get it. He goes, they have these funny hairdos. Funny hairdos. I said, what do you mean by that? I don't know. I can't describe. He said, well, kind of like Mo Howard and the Three Stooges. I thought, what? You know,
oh, the mop head.
Yeah, but I thought that's the only way you could describe it. Mo from the Three Stooges.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
So I was thinking, like, guys like Mo, guys in a band look like Mo from the Three Stooges. Why is everyone so excited? But that was an interesting bus ride because everyone was just very excited.
Like Ed Sullivan or something?
On Ed Sullivan, right. The first Beatles thing on Ed Sullivan. But I remember the bus being all excited. Most times the kids didn't talk like that, but that particular ride, it was...
They were falling.
Yeah, right, so it was funny.
So you got your pen, and you're not using the desk. You're using... Did you have books, or just using papers?
Oh, for what? You mean...
Did you have the sketchbook?
Oh, yeah, like a little notebook. We had those notebook pads and whatever.
Would you do it on the bus?
I would do it on the bus, right. Because I'd sit on the bus. That's how it started. I'd sit on the bus and just start messing around with the pen, you know.
Yeah.
On our way to Datsun and the way back, too.
Right.
So that's kind of how I got into that. Previous to that, though, I was kind of into molding clay, little figures out of that kind of clay that never dries, this oil-based kind of clay.
Yeah.
So I was really into just doing that. And I'd sit in my room on the floor and mold these figures, you know. And my parents thought I was kind of weird because I wouldn't go out to the park and play or something, you know. They thought, what's he doing in here, you know. But it was kind of, I think I just like to go into this kind of realm of just in my own world somehow, you know. So just, it's an escape or something, I don't know. Just going somewhere else with these kind of thoughts, you know, molding figures and the drawing. So that's kind of how it all started. And then I started taking art classes in junior high, you know, kind of becoming slightly interested.
So it was actually the device. It wasn't another cat drawing. You just like this. They were pretty intense things. They ain't like a pencil. I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. They had like...
The cartridges.
Got almost like blood, though. The ink.
The ink would come out, and it just...
It took a while to dry.
Right. It just looks so good on the paper.
Yeah. And it feels good.
Yeah, you kind of move it on the paper. And I just really got into that feeling. And then when it was wet, I'd still smear it a little bit and do these kind of action figures that are kind of flying around with the smear behind them, you know. Things like that, you know.
So your first art classes are at Datsun.
Yeah, I started getting interested in art then, I think, or I started thinking about that kind of thing, you know, in school. Yeah.
And, a lot of people, it doesn't help. Did they help? Like they show you some techniques?
Yeah, I don't really remember. I think I must have learned some things taking these classes. It just sort of opened my mind to that direction. And, you know, later, I went to high school and I was in banding. And then I became more involved in it. And then I'd meet, that's when it got more intense with the kind of meeting kids who are into
other guys.
And there were all this group of guys who were into the underground comics because this was in the 60s. So I never seen Robert Crumb and all those like Zap comics and all that stuff, and I'd never seen that. And one kid would bring a couple of comics.
Do you remember Zap comics? Do you remember the first ones?
Yeah, I remember.
I got something to tell you about that. Let's listen to some music.
All right.
Stash money, tight jeans, and showing off something nice. Cash wallet, and dish, swallowed. This, to me, is pretty boy swag. Save, spend 50 cents for a machete. Those Smith bros, suck dick, what? Fuck you, bros. on this. Drop. Scraggly ass hair. All over it. Vomit. From the shade. Market bell. If I was Johnny Weissmuller, I'd yell in despair. A roadside that does not have chickens crossing between the signs is pointless and ridiculous. Vermichet. These sung lips. Your girlfriend after sucking my dick. Vermichet. Made a mistake. Thought I was down with a truce treat. But a Barbasol slob ain't worth calling for. I put the K in the BS. Make B-sols behave. Firmer motherfucking shade. Make me want to misbehave. So mature and innocent. Watch core a minute. North Korean K-pop workers must be in cred. The motherfucker wants to defect. Vermichet. If Bieber grows a beard, I'll cut my wrist in despair. The blade? My dear, I just don't like that prick, suck dick, Johnny Bellhop Morris. Never shaved. Jim Jim, pop star looks and fame, or bearded poet, dead and lame. Vermichet. Remember, dear, your boy group Fade will be our best customer someday. Vermichet. When Jesus resurrects, you won't know him. He looks so fine, you'll probably blow him. Vermichet. What is real and what is cotton candy? Keep your razor hand handy. Vermichet.
Rain on the fragments. Rain in the ditch, rain along the curving breadth of coastal highway. Wind flattens in palms. This happened yesterday. You needed something, but you can't remember what. Viper rhythm lazy, a hair's breadth off. It's growing. Beyond the guardrail. It's daylight, but store lights are off. Except one. Wheels begin to turn. A church of sorts. Brightly lit. Cars in their neat arcs. People walking in. Dads with kids. glass doors, a clerk mouthing words. Engine running, you're still not sure. No sound but the beating of your heart.
Thank you. raging of animals and people and plants and trails and trees and wind screams have been and are being scraped clean.
Satisfied.
Watch for the Pebro Show. Something brand new from a band me and Raymond just started called Sock Type. It's called Burma Shave, a double 7-inch, 4-song thing out of Cologne, Germany. Then another thing I'm involved with called Detective Instinct, Home is the Place You Leave. This is where I was given words and I was given music and they just asked for my spiel. Spieler.
Spieler.
And after that, beginning to see the light from the Velvet Underground, live from the Boston Tea Party. This is the Notorious Guitar Amp tape, because supposedly the machine they recorded this with, they just put it on top of Lou's amp. So it's about 99% Lou's guitar.
I've had some recordings like that.
And then All Songs Have an Ending by Allegheny Whitefish. Tracker Tom from Pittsburgh. O'Farrell by Dirty Beaches, which is trippy because we got an O'Farrell street here. In fact, fucking Richard Bonney lived on it.
Is that the one with the big hill?
Yeah, he's O'Farrell.
Oh,
I just gave Alex a tour. I think he's driving to Frankfurt right now. Be safe, Alex. Wharton Tears with Big Dog. You know Wharton Tears?
I don't think I do.
One time, he has a studio in New York. He did a lot of Sonic Youth. I got to record with Bob Quine with him.
Oh, really?
Boydoid guy.
Uh-huh.
And everybody said, watch out, man, Bob Quine is mean.
Was he nice or mean?
Nice.
Okay.
So watch out when people tell you to watch out.
I know, you
out.
Don't really know what... Yeah. Watch out when people tell you to watch out. I don't even remember
then
that one.
Then we heard Sigodi with Chronicles of Thought Rearranged at Thalemann's Italian Fratelli's. They're great. Mel Banana's got a new album, and we heard Vertigo Game. And finally, I Need a Man by Caddy Ness and the Revenge. Now, the story about this band is Miss Pete played one gig. She played bass for one gig.
With who now?
This photographer lady who Muay Thai and all this.
Oh, all right.
She lives in Strasbourg, France now. Baby number two is coming. But she played bass for one gig in this Caddy Ness in the Revenge. I played a gig with a guy who took her place. Talk about the small world.
Wow.
So, okay. I told when we were listening to music people, I told Joe Baez about Zach Comics, Charlie Plymel, being the guy who first published those, and a good friend of mine, and what a trippy small world. So you were inspired by these underground.
Yeah.
Furry Freak Brothers, Mr. Natural.
Yeah, in high school, yeah.
We used to read these. D-Boo never drew them, but we would read them.
Yeah, well, I met certain kids in art class, and a couple of them would have their rapidographs with them.
Yeah.
You know, and sticking out of their pocket, just like Robert Crumb. Those old rapidographs, the black ones, you know?
Sure.
Cool looking
those
ones.
Kind, yeah.
And then I became part of that group of people. We started drawing in class. And
what about Mad?
Well, Mad was something I didn't really try to duplicate. It was a kind of a thing that I might have read when I was younger. Yeah. It wasn't
more for the words, less.
Yeah, I just sort of, I like the artwork. Well, if you want to go way back, there were other weird kind of publications that had comics in there. Before Underground Comics, you'd see these things. There was a bookstore in Wilmington that was sort of one of these late night kind of bookstore places, and they
what
had.
What was it called?
I don't remember. It was on Anaheim near Avalon Boulevard.
Wow, middle of town.
Yeah, right there. And it was kind of a place that was kind of seedy, and they have books, and they'd have these little weird magazines that had these, I can't remember the names of the artists then, but that's when I started noticing strange drawings and magazines, and they had like sex books there, like Sex to 60 or something.
Oh, yeah.
See those kind of things. And, wow, what's this, you know? So that's when I was really younger. But in high school, I got into the underground comics.
Right, out of San
because,
Francisco.
Yeah, because of the kids and some of the kids in class. And we would use these rapidographs, and I learned how to use that. And we would draw, and you know, all the time. And I wanted to be an underground cartoonist at that point. I thought, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get out of high school. I'm going to be an underground cartoonist.
Wow.
So I would just draw and draw all the time.
Never thinking of painting, drawing.
No, just drawing with a technical pen. You know, the rapidograph.
Yeah, sure, I remember those.
Yeah, so that's all I did.
I thought the cats who had those were, like, really together.
Yeah, you know, and
it isn't just something you stick in the sharpener, man. This is like this engineered precision.
Right, and you had to know how to clean them and stuff,
because
they clog up all the time. And I learned how to clean them, and you know, certain they came in different sizes. There were wide ones and narrow ones.
Right.
And so that was my thing for a while. And then at some point, a friend of mine, my friend Clem, his cousin Victor had this Chicano rock band called Tantar. So Clem became the sound man, or the roadie, you know. And, yeah. You might have seen me. We talked about that. Yeah.
That
when
park,
I played, right.
On the stairs of the.
Right. So I was sort of like, I became like
I
the
didn't
second.
I didn't know their name was
Tantar.
Okay. We must be.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
From Wilmington. And they
were pretty
like,
bad. They could play.
They can rock it out. They were yeah. good. And their house, or the bass player had a house in East Wilmington. And that was a hangout, you know. That was a cool hangout for Wheelmouse, you know. Girls would help stop by, and you know, cool guys, you know. It was kind of a good spot to hang out. And I'd be like the second string roadie guy or something. But I was always drawing then, so I just sit there and draw, you know. And people would look at me, what are you doing, you know? So that was kind of my trip, drawing and drawing.
And this stuff went into books.
No, I would just draw different things, paper bags and. Scrap paper and nothing really. I never really drew in any kind of official, you know, drawing pads or anything like that. So that's kind of an early development for me, getting into that. And I was taking classes at Harvard College, art classes, thinking about transferring to an art school.
And what about this kind of school? You were learning stuff from these cats.
Yeah, then I started learning stuff then. What happened, I was sort of isolated a bit during that period. I was associating with like three or four people. It was kind of a weird period for me. And then I said, okay, I'm going to start taking classes at Harbor, art classes. And I took a painting class, oil painting. And just to kind of break out of this sort of isolation I was in. And it was sort of strange for me because I was in a big class and you're doing these paintings and getting critiqued and, you know.
In front of everybody.
Yeah, in front of everybody. I had to kind of come out, you know, in a way. Wow, you know. So it was a trip, yeah. And then I started seeing other people and being in the school there. And, you know, I took some more painting classes and other classes, art classes. I decided I was going to study art there and transfer. At one point, I remember being in a painting class and there was a lot of noise in the hallway or something. Some people were doing something in the hallway. And the teacher's kind of laughing and shut the door. And at some point, they opened the door and then some guy had driven his car through the hallway of the art building. They were from the class across the hall. They were doing it was a sculpture class, but this guy, John Sturgeons, was teaching video art. So they somehow Harvard got hold of all these video cameras. So they were teaching video art. And people had their different projects, and this guy, Joey, he's from Wilmington, he drove his car down the hallway and did something and drove it out, because he had a tiny little car, you know. He literally drove it into the building and drove it out of the building and videotaped it. So I thought, whoa, you know, I want to get into this, you know. What's going on? What is going on here? This is art, you know? Whoa, what is this? This is like the 70s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So the next semester, I took one of those classes with Sturgeons, and I started getting into that kind of thinking, you know, the conceptual art and the video art kind of idea. So I started thinking more along those lines, and I stopped doing paintings, and I wanted to do more like conceptual art, thinking, yeah, this is what I want to do. And I'd finished my studying at Harvard, ready to transfer, and at that point, I thought, well, you know, I met Jack Brewer there. That's around when I met Jack Brewer, and I got involved in music with him, you know, through him. And I kind of seen my first development of music as an art experiment. You know, I said, I'm going to try to play guitar from a different perspective. So that's kind of how it started with me. That's how I got involved in music at that point. And,
you know, part of the conceptual.
Yeah, part of the whole idea of moving on from it's part of the conceptual thing, from the idea of wanting to do art, but using music as a idea or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I thought it would just be a short experiment, you know, a few months or something. But I got more and more involved. Things started happening. we struggled for about a year to get a band together. And then you got us our first gig. I remember that.
Yeah.
And, you know, things developed along the way, and then SST got interested in us. And, you know, I always would say, you know, well, next month if nothing happens, I'm just going to quit. But something would always happen and keep me going, you know. I go, oh, well.
What about on the side? Was there drawing on the side?
A little bit, you know. I draw a little bit still, you know. A lot of these drawings in the some of the earlier ones in here from that time.
Hold it. We're at the end of the first hour. 2013, November 16, Dishwap Beagle Show with Joe Baez. Hold tight for hour two.
I gotta start working on that.
2013, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Everybody.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, this is the first time in a very long time we played at a house party. We used to do this quite regularly, which means we did it twice.
There were two things I wanted from this life. To be the Morrissey of America and for you to be my wife. Now I'm driving for the border. My tapes and my LPs, and yes, they did come from the woodworks, asking your name at first, and then with full knowledge, they know your telephone numbers and your GPA in college, and you still manage to laugh when you see me coming, so I keep strumming. That's what God gave me. Nobody's gonna save me, and nobody's gonna love you like I do. Like I do. I still got a bicycle, I never got the dog like you wanted. Could this really be a confession? No, do not flatter yourself, my darling, do not flatter yourself, my darling, do not flatter yourself, my darling. You might have been my Tanya Donnelly. You should have thrown this lonesome muse overboard. She said, that's what I thought I did. That's exactly as I remember it. I swear we were having a party. I put the potion in your drink. I read the directions perfectly. I watched your eyes go dark. What happened, baby? What happened, baby? You're still breathing. You're making eyes at me.
Okay. Well, for Pedro Show, started hour two off with some Unknown Instructors, the third album, Praj, Joe Baiza, Dan McGuire, George Hurley, myself. I think on this, we had David Thomas.
Is he on that one?
And on this album.
On the album.
This tune, I think it's only me, you, and Georgie, actually.
Oh, hey, I gotta say something. My favorite thing with David Thomas, he goes, we're in the studio. He's living in England, doesn't he?
Right.
So he goes, yeah, it's kind of warm. And he's hanging out in the studio. He goes, I'm gonna go put on my swimming trunks. he comes back in his swimming trunks, sitting there.
And he was sweating, too. It was hot there. Georgie had his waiting line.
Oh, we had to wait a long time, man. My dad was cool.
Many hours. And then, you know, it was a trip. Georgie sets up the drums, and I'm thinking, I'm wondering to myself, I wonder when was the last time Georgie played? Was it a long time ago? And I start seeing these, I don't know, I thought I was having flashbacks and stuff, like I was seeing trails. And nope, turned out it was dust coming off his cymbal, so it was like, whoa, it's new. Because remember, he just started playing everything he knew. He was going through his whole little arsenal of licks and stuff.
Yeah, kind of warming
up. Yeah. And all this dust cloud around him, like it was, you know, Pillsbury Doughboy, Flower Man. And I was like, whoa, it's been a little while since Richard last played. After that, we heard Father's Day by Sterile Jets, Graffiti Finger by Roosterhead, and finally, Song for Evan Dando to Sing by Rod Bryan. So you're doing the music, a little drawing on the side. What happened to the idea you had earlier, I'm going to be an underground
cartoonist?
Right. Because you also thought music was only going to be a phase, right?
Yeah, well, that kind of faded with the idea of taking art classes and painting, doing that, and then going from that to thinking I want to be a conceptual artist in the early 70s. So the underground cartoonist idea sort of faded into the background in a way. But I still like those comics.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I started going, I started thinking further along the way, you know. I mean, when I wanted to be a conceptual artist, I thought painting might have been kind of corny, you know, old-fashioned, you know.
Yeah.
Ah, painting, no one's doing that. I got some other things I want to try to do. So being a cartoonist became something way in the distant past or something, you know. But then I would do flyers and stuff, so they would come back every once in a while, you know, for the band, you know. Let's do a flyer for this or that. So then I would kind of break out the pen and do it then, you know, like the October Faction covers and other flyers and the Buzzer Howl cover.
Yeah, Minuteman,
Buzzer Howl.
Minute Flack. The back of What Makes a Man Start Fires.
What's on that? I don't remember.
I think you got Charlie Parker and John Coltrane.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Miles. There's three cats.
They sort of stand. I think I vaguely
remember. Way back then.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
And there's a... D. Boone drew a picture, and it's got a caption that says, like, some cat eating his chow, and it says, eat your lunch at noon break. Understand? Or something like
right,
that.
Oh, right,
yeah. By the bottom of the
Oh, yeah, that weird job back then, I remember.
Yeah. I guess he was chowing at the wrong time.
Yeah, he liked to chow.
And yours had these three cats, and one of them, I think, is holding his horn case.
Oh, yeah. I think at that time I just discovered bebop and jazz.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got into drawing all those guys. You know, I see photos of them, and I start practicing my drawing by drawing, you know, from the photographs of those jazz musicians.
Yeah.
So I was really into that. So that was one of my interests, musically and just for drawing, you know, subject, you know, the jazz thing.
I think there was a Gary Jacoby drawn on there, too, but his technique was like little dots.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it's One-Eyed Soldier, I think.
That's right. Gary would do these tiny little paintings, I remember. And I said, why are you drawing, painting so small? Why don't you paint larger? He goes, no, this is good for me. I don't have much space. And he had this one, yeah, there were little paintings. He goes, Salvador Dali painted small, you know. You know, and he had this one painting. It must have been like 12 by 10 or something. I really liked this painting. He said, that's a cool painting. And then one day he surprised me. He said, hey, I got a gift for you. And he gave me an enlarged version of that painting. He painted a large painting. I still have that. It was really big. And it was a larger version of the small one. So, you know,
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing, yeah. And it's five, like, looks like guys, young guys, and one of them has a circle around him.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're
right. talking about. It almost seems like Gary's the guy with the circle.
Is I remember the little... Some... It was in the pad.
Right, yeah.
You know, people out there... Joe Bison lived with Gary Jacoby underneath D. Boone here.
Yeah, under D. Boone's apartment.
Pacific, not too far from here, between right, 19th near and 20th Harris. In an alley.
Yeah.
And this is where we started the Minutemen. It was upstairs.
And, that's right.
He was, he's a visual artist also. But as you move through music, like the artist people, people don't know this, that the early 70s...
Well, Gary was a guy I met at Harvard College in the art classes. Right.
Well, I was going to say to the listeners out there,
yeah.
Not early 70s, but 70s punk had a lot of artist people.
Mm-hmm.
It was much different than the 80s with the teenager people.
With the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, with the hardcore. It was... I would say predominantly artist people. And even somebody like Dee Boone, who's, was a painter. There was a lot of cats like that in the scene. And then I think people like the weirdo guys actually went to Cal Arts. I mean, you had actually people in art school. And then, like you and Gary.
The Hollywood.
A lot of those cats, didn't you notice, hanging around? So there was a music component. But also the way they did gigs. They weren't so pro rock and roll. They were almost anti and was like performance.
Right.
That's, really
that's what made it different, trying
that's
to break away from the...
Actually, it appealed to me versus the arena rock crap.
But you guys, you and Dennis were already familiar with the rock thing.
We copied off the record.
So you guys were ahead of the game for me. Because I came into the music scene and, I was just as fresh to me. I didn't know what was going on. You guys had already been doing stuff.
Well, we knew how to copy off records. We didn't really know how to use... We thought we were way behind in the idea of using music for expression. Our thing was more like building models.
Oh, I see.
It kind of looks like songs. It, but not really. Whereas, those guys, they didn't care about like any form copying. They were, Raymond's taught me about the scene in Europe during the First World War. It was called Dada.
Oh, Dada.
Like this kind of, actually, we were like doing an echo of that in a way, but for those times, 70s. Instead of the teens in Europe, but it was kind of like it was kind of reacting.
Well, that's what's special about the Pedro scene to me, because it came a little after the originally it was a Hollywood punk scene, but the Pedro scene, it seemed like everyone really wanted to do something different, so no one was copying each other. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to sound like this guy and the other guy from the hardcore scene or from Orange County or whatever. You hear people say, we're a mix of this band and a little bit of the other band. You always, when they try to describe their band, but the Pedro bands, they just came out from left field, just like Gino and a clarinet and, just like, whoa, that's your
and
band,
And
huh?
No art beginnings, because Pedro's a work in town. I mean, Dee Boone painted, but George Hurley, Greg Hurley, Gino, Martin, guys that were just fired up by the scene to get...
Right.
Creative.
Right, I just want to do something.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no nurture. It was that scene that just fired people up.
Yeah, it was a
trip. With the clarinet.
Yeah.
It was so wild. It was like not have nothing to do with rock and roll.
Oh, no. It was a trip.
It's hard to tell people that, because they had to be there to know it. But a kind of a contagious situation.
Yeah, then someone else would pop up with their group, Well, I'll do something. Even more, even
The group that Gary Jacoby put together,
Gary's group,
Lena and Gino ended up like Curly, Georgie's brother, and Jimmy Otter later on, Trippy's collection,
right?
Cats, here, let's listen to more music.
Okay.
so afraid that you want to stop. You sit down and then you wanna give up. We'll be right back.
Se eu desço, quer que eu suba? Se eu subo, me quer no chão? Se eu me levanto, me derruba? Se eu derrubo, sou o vilão. Mas não esquento mais a juba, nem perco a respiração, pois o amor em flauta ou tuba sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração. Sentido, entonação do meu jardim, mais bela margarida. É chuva fina e doce em meu sertão. E agora tudo tem alguma graça, até se já não temos mais cachaça, pois tudo melhora quando ela me abraça. Tudo passa, e sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração. Sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração, sopra vida ao coração.
Show. I just got back from Brazil. I did two gigs with the Missing Man in Sao Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, and people gave us music there. So we heard a bunch of music from some Sao Paulo and Rio bands. First one was Verums de Limbo, with D Boom, and then All In from the Name the Band. Black Snake Rock by The Orange Disaster. Fantastic Business by Tokyo Savannah. Kamikaze Kid by Os Estudiantes. We got to play with them in Rio. They were a trip. They were great. Also, Verums de Limbo got to play with in Sao Paulo. interesting stuff. And Mandinga from Baoba Stereo Club. Abra Canino by Baobo Stereo Club and M. Takara. And finally, Karnica by Nevelton Sakodi. Yeah, it was a trip. I mean, we were only there a short time.
Wow.
But they got a scene that's coming on.
Really?
It's interesting to see how, you know, somebody once told me the only thing new is you finding out about it.
That's right.
It's an okay thing.
They've always had a strong music scene, you know, so you would think.
You can imagine,
still, you know,
the bass and the drums and percussion. And a real big hard rock thing, you know, Sepultura.
Really?
Which is like, come here, Cookie Monster voice.
In fact,
one of these bands that played with us was Def Coffins. Yeah.
Brujeria goes over there. Pat Hood plays
with
them. They go over there and play
large audiences.
And you know,
the Ramones
ended
up being really big in Brazil.
Really? Wow.
So, but it's interesting, their own home brew, and they're coming up with their own sounds. It's neat to get a chance to check that out.
That's a great opportunity.
For us, you know, punk was really important. It still is. I mean, but for 30 years ago, it got us going. 35 years ago, and there's still a new, seems there's a new
shift
that, takes everything.
I kind of see punk like blues, the blues scene.
Yeah, right.
It gets handed to a next generation, you know, just do something else with it or something.
And I think it's neat, especially when they add to it.
Yeah,
I think there's something about, paying homage to the old forms, you know, but that's almost like wearing an Elvis suit or something. But then there's these people that use it for a springboard to get their own thing going.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of what I idealistically always thought of punk, where it was more of a state of mind than a style of music.
That's right, yeah.
So what do you think about this thing, about all the artists involved with the early punk movement? I remember there even was a dilemma with some parts of the scene, which music was too art, right? Art.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. Of course, I was attracted to that at that time. I mean, I kind of liked it then. It was all those weird art bands. Well, I liked the Screamers. That was one of my favorite groups at that period.
Nervous Gender.
Nervous Gender later on. Nervous Gender came along. I mean, I really loved the Screamers in there. That was, you know, I really liked those guys. Yeah, Nervous Gender. I can't remember all the names of those bands.
Zeb.
Oh, Zeb was a trip.
With all the
metal shaking
stuff.
No
guitars, no drums. You know?
He just had percussive metal pieces, and he'd like wave these sheets of metal, and right, like you're just a foot away from it. Like if his hand slipped,
right.
It would probably cut your head open or something.
Joanna Wendt.
Her performances.
Right, she had some
those
guys making some like ambient sounds, right?
Yeah, there'd be somebody with
be
a keyboard.
Trippy-ass.
It'd be a prepared thing. She'd have all these props and things on the stage, and pull something out of something and find something and then pull something out of that, and it just sort of evolved. And what's this? It was just like this.
But it was a surprise,
you just look at it. It was cool. I've seen her a few times at the Hong Kong Cafe.
Right. That New Year's show with Herbs.
Right, yeah.
I'd write about that song. What about Weeba, she got into kind of a trip like that, not as much with the props, but
yeah, I didn't know her so well then in that time.
The performance. Yeah, in fact, we were still going, right?
Yeah, her and Ralph have the...
What's it called?
It's Gerritsen and Gorodetsky.
Okay,
you know, their last names.
What was the Putana?
Putanesca.
Putanesca,
That's a band. That's a band we had.
You were part of that.
I was part of that with Ralph and Weeba and Wayne Griffin. So it was sort of a... I don't know how you describe it. Sort of this kind of... kinetic trio with a kind of a Weeba and her technique or style of singing, which is more smooth. So kind of matching those two things together, you know. So that was, you know, that was cool for a while.
Suburban Lawns was kind of an art band, right?
Oh, right.
Right.
That reminds me. That's when I first seen you guys at the Suburban Lawns studio, right? But let me ask you a question, because first seen you guys and I go, these guys are, you know, I was at Harvard College and I seen a flyer. It says punk, something like Punk Invades Long Beach. I thought, what? I never seen a punk band around here play a punk show.
Yeah.
So it was at this Suburban Lawn studio. I went to that and Reactionaries were playing. And it says from San Pedro, reactionaries. I thought, wow, a punk band from San Pedro. That was a trip to me, too. And then you guys started to play. I go, cool. And then, boom, it was done. It's like, wow, that was short. I think it might have been three songs or something. And then I go, and it was a lot of people, so I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah, I think it was Plugs and Alley Cats. Yeah. Bring the Axe.
Yeah, so I went
to those guys.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember just going to Deep Boo, and I, you know, he looked kind of nice. I'll talk to him. I said, that was pretty short. He goes, oh, yeah, our bass player passed out and broke his bass or something.
What? There's no air.
And you just sort of
fell back
in the bass neck, bro.
I woke right back up, only I was falling, right? Because the fall, like, woke me up.
Oh, okay.
But it was from heat.
So, no, yeah, it was hot in there.
It was hot. Wearing some coat.
Like, and you guys are really playing hard.
I remember wearing a sweater with the collar.
Yeah.
You know, a sweater that don't have arms.
Oh, like a vest or something?
But no buttons.
Oh.
But, yeah, it's the trippiest, you know how we were.
Yeah, the, right.
And anyway, I was wearing a big trench coat. It had so much heat that only lasted 3 songs.
You couldn't breathe,
yeah. Actually, that's the last one. After that, EMP Boomy.
That was
D-Boom leaves.
Reactionary stops there.
Because he brought even another guitarist in. D-Boom wouldn't write any songs for Reactionary. He was waiting for the real band.
Oh, he didn't write Reactionary songs?
No,
he
didn't consider Reactionary as a real band. We were just doing this in the meantime. What happened was when we went up and saw the bags, and I said, we can do this. But then he said, man, I don't know about making a band. So I answered a Recycler ad, and I jammed with these guys on Santa Monica Boulevard. Guy ended up playing drums for the F Word, but we did like I Want to Be Your Dog for 3 hours. I told him, boom, said, okay, I'll make a band. But it was like a little holding pattern. He was waiting for the real band. And that was it ended up being the Minuteman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of strange. So that
ended funny up, how that
he
works.
He was pleasing in this other guitar so he could leave. He didn't want to be in that band anymore. Which is basically the same guys, just with the Martin saying.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think he. Well, he told me he always wanted a trio.
Oh, okay.
He just wanted a trio. I think the Dills had big influence on him. Well, I know he did. All of us, you know. But the way they had the three guys, he liked that.
Right.
Yeah, so ended up in that first batch of songs we wrote, Above You. Down the street here.
They didn't sound like the Dills, though.
I know. Because we were influenced by these records from England.
Yeah, a lot of those groups.
A band called Wire and a band called the Pop Group.
That
was our punk. Our punk was going to see shows, but also hearing records from Zed. Remember that store?
Right. I go to Zed once in a while.
Wow. It was
before punk, they have a lot of the imports.
That's right.
From England.
Costules.
trippy
stuff.
And then all of a sudden, punk came out, and he had the singles there.
Yeah, the Connects, though. See?
Yeah, what is this thing? I see a Sex Pistols record, and I looked at who are these guys?
Yeah. I'll talk about that more. We're at the end of the second hour.
All right.
November 16, 2013, the Schwab Peter Show. Joe Biza here. Hold tight for hour three.
Stranglers. Like, where's the Stranglers? He goes, we don't have that in this store. Like, for some reason, he was against the Stranglers, and he said, there's no Stranglers in this store.
Oh, no.
I said, really? Okay, I didn't ask him anymore, but you look kind of like...
Well, they were on a big label. You could probably get that licorice
pizza. Yeah, I just kind of
walked in. Everybody, it's November 16, 2013, third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Juan from Pedro Show started off the third hour with something new from Hobo Combo. You know about this cat in New York City?
No, who is that? Hobo Combo.
He's called the Street Viking of, I don't know, New York City. Yeah, he made all this intense music.
Really? Hobo Combo. Okay.
Well, no. His name was Moondog. They're a tribute band to Moondog. That was his music name. He was a homeless guy. He made all these incredible musics.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
To do a couple albums when they found him. And Hobo Combo's got Andrea Belfi, who plays in El Sueño, or our El Sueño del Mar Nayar trio. And check him out. This,
a lot of interesting music out there.
The biggest source of music now, people tell me, it's this YouTube.com.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on there. Huh? Yeah,
you can so really check out this guy Moondog.
Yeah, Moondog. I will do that.
One word.
Yeah.
The Street Viking or something.
Well, I mean, sometimes you go to a party, someone puts YouTube on, they select their songs through YouTube.
You believe it?
That's right.
At
the party, let's put this on.
And then the OCs, have you heard these cats? They live up in the city, San Francisco. I think they're actually
Bands
from Providence. A tune called Contraption Soul Desert. It is a great band. Got to play with them at the end of September up in San Jose.
Yeah, you get to see all that stuff,
That is
traveling
neat.
And playing.
That is neat.
Yeah.
Like I said, that thing about getting the records from England, but then getting to see the gigs in Hollywood, I think both sides were really important to us.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. We were influenced by Dills watching them, but we're influenced by Wire and Pop Group by listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Minutemen are a weird mixture. And then the other weird thing is when we really start playing gigs, and especially touring, that whole scene burned out. And there's only these young hardcore kids that you're playing for. So, of course, people say, you sound so weird. But they don't understand the situation.
Yeah, they're coming from...
Isn't it weird how the old 70s punk is hardly talked about? You know? It's more identified
hardcore.
With the youth kind of thing. Yeah, and fast guitar. And they take that little period of the glitter and glamour, glam art people, and just pretend it didn't even happen.
Yeah, maybe because the hardcore is more popular. I don't know.
Well, it did. I mean,
that's probably it.
I think if you're a teenager now, probably it's a guaranteed fact you're going to have a few punk years. Where in those days, right, it was a little small minority on the outside. Not really about kids. And then hardcore kids.
That's when it opened up to
parallel
all the young people. how that grew, you mean?
Where it's like social. They're angry with their parents. I mean, a lot of those cats in the Hollywood scene, they, parents. People too old.
They're already older, yeah. 20s, late 20s, early 30s. I mean, that's how old I was around that.
Yeah, right. You're not going to write songs about...
I hate my parents.
But that's what's about Orange County, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Or whatever.
But it was a trip for me hanging out with them, because I was older than those guys, and what are they up to now, Like, I met Mugger, I remember, and he had to spend the night at our place underneath, with Gary, and him and another friend, they're all crazy and looking for girls and, wild guys.
Full of fire.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, too, weren't that big of misfits. Maybe socially. But, I don't know.
Oh, and they came from that environment.
I asked all the
too.
Time why we were so different. And why the SST bands were so different. But if you knew the scene we were being kind of bred from, to me, it's totally understandable.
Yeah, definitely.
And especially those records, too, like The Fall and Red Crayola. I mean, some of the very adventurous stuff, Cabaret Voltaire.
Well, yeah, I heard a lot of that music through you guys, so I never even heard of those
groups. We'd just pick them because of the name or what the cover looked like.
I go, wow, what's this?
We had no idea, and it was so econo, $2, why not roll the dice and see what it gets us.
Yeah, there's some great stuff out there then. Well, there still is. I mean, like, all these groups you play with and you know about.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of good music out there. I mean, now it's hopeful. There's a lot of young people doing great stuff. I'm just not in touch with it myself, but when I hear it, it's amazing to me.
I have that, a lot of the stuff I play on the shows with Catskin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't play any Mersh. There's enough of that.
There's enough Mersh out there.
Yeah. So Yeah, people asking you to do album covers. I remember exactly the situation with Buzzer Hal. We wanted to use this Scientific America cover of Tropical Tree Frogs with all these exotic colors. Of course, the four color separations were going to cost $1,000. And I was like, oh man, forget it. We recorded the record for $50, I remember. One side, Spot did live to two track. The other side, we worked with Ethan James. Ethan James said, look,
please.
You give me a song at Radio Tokyo for a Radio Tokyo compilation, and I'll record you guys a song. So we put three of our songs together, and we told him it was one.
Oh, really? You mean unedited? You just played all three back to back?
Together, and he thought it was this big.
Wow, what a strange song.
Opera. So it ended up being what?
It wasn't that long, anyway.
It's cut and Dream Told by Moto. And so the record cost $50. I said, we can't have the art cost way much.
Way more than the record cost.
So you did that thing in one night.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember now. I guess I did.
In one night, because we had to turn it in. And I had to make the decision. I said, look, if Joe Bison can do it, let's go with the Ink Man. You did it, which is basically me and D. Boone hollering at
each other
and spitting up vacuum cleaners and telephones.
Yeah, these guys, because I've seen that happen so often with you guys. I got the idea for the cover. Yeah, they're going to be yelling at each other, and this stuff's going to be flying around everywhere. But, yeah.
And the October Faction, you actually played in that band.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Which that ended up being
the jam band we
that
had.
That opened up for Black Flag, because we got tired of dealing with the local politics of openers.
Right, so Black Flag
had, bring their own.
Bring your own opening band. You know, it was October Faction. Later, it was another Tom Ciccoli's Dog or something.
And Gone.
Huh?
It ended up being Gone.
Oh, and then Gone at some point.
Right, which was Greg's.
Yeah, Greg's thing. And then Gone took over in Black Flag. He just stopped Black Flag and decided to do Gone.
Right. And then Hank took the Gone band.
Right. Right. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. The guys from New Jersey, who are those guys from Trenton? Those two
right,
guys.
Right, Sim and Andrew.
Yeah, they're cool guys. They're really good musicians.
Andrew was just playing with Jella until recently.
With who now?
Jella. He has his band called the Guantanamo School of Medicine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, comes out of doctor's coat.
Man, I miss that stuff. I got to get out there.
You got to get out there. But did you ever seriously think about that? Hey, maybe I can do album covers and album art.
You know, not really. No. I mean, when people would ask me, I would do it. Yeah, you know, when they would ask me. But I never thought of just for projects when people
ask.
There's
some Saffron covers, too.
Yeah, I did the covers.
Shine On?
Some Heads or something? It's the Heads here. I got two Heads here in the exhibition. A couple of those Heads are on that cover.
Okay.
I would kind of organize the covers. Sometimes, at first I would draw them.
Yeah.
And then later I just organized how they were going to look, and I asked someone else to do things for them. Like the Saccharine Trust, We Became Snakes. Gary drew that.
Gary Jacoby, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It has all those little trippy.
Yeah, that was a cool cover.
Kind of jungle feel.
Uh-huh.
Who did The World Broken?
I think Joe Carducci. Joe Carducci.
That's right.
Did that.
And that was his little sketch, you know?
Right,
like,
he did some...
Like his little doodle.
Right, and it kind of matched the recording, too. It was a good visual for the
only
the
time
sound.
I ever played in a tuxedo. You guys had me wear a tuxedo.
Oh, right, that was Jack's idea, the tuxedos. Yeah, that was funny, the tuxedo.
Hey, let's hear some more music.
We recommend termination. Born again without a brain again. Thank you.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a little stubborn sometimes. But
yeah, well, I remember one time he sold all his furniture.
He what now?
Sold all his furniture.
Oh, really? Because he's moving?
Bad time. Yeah.
Oh.
It was bad time. Walk for Pedro show, last music for the show. From Mobile, Alabama, Roman Gabriel Todd's The Beast Rising Up Out of the Sea with Born Again Without a Brain Again. Then Ott from Austin, Texas with Thwap. Apostasy from Swenson Klein. I think they're Montreal. No. Something Quebec. Maybe Montreal. Sorry. Something Canadian. Pleasure Cruise from Hot Cha Cha. That's out of Cleveland. And finally, Cop Sweep from Fruit, which is a Long Beach Pedro band. Tell me something about this art show.
Well, okay. It's stuff from the past and stuff that I've been doing not too long ago, and even newer stuff. You know, I've gotten more.
Well, how did it come apart? How did it come about?
Oh, Lori. It's Lori's idea.
Lori Stewart.
Yeah. So she offered me an exhibition here, and at first I thought, well, okay, I guess I can draw some new things, you know, trying to do that. And I did some of that. But I didn't realize I had so much old drawings laying around, you know. So right. I started looking around for some of the old stuff, and it just started coming out of drawers and places, you know. So I thought, wow, what's all this? There's this thing and the other thing. I had a lot of old drawings. And Lori came by where I live at. I call it the shack.
Over Koreatown, right?
Yeah, in Koreatown, near MacArthur Park. I've been living there for over 20 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of like my studio now, but I got this bad habit of collecting and saving things. So she came over and she kind of...
Shit hoarding.
Yeah, exactly. She came over, she tripped out and goes, what the heck's going on? And she's looking at everything. So she decided to incorporate that into the exhibition, which made sense because that's kind of a what stimulates me in a way. And I wrote something
about
it.
You're talking about the actual pad.
The actual pad, yeah. And it's just saving things. And
so these big-ass pictures.
The big picture on the wall is sort of a photograph of how it looks inside my place. And my mind is like that. It gets cluttered with things. I'm saving things. I don't know what's wrong with me, but my pockets will be full of stuff, my car, you know, it's just things. I see things, and I take a lot of photographs, so that's sort of collecting, too, you know, because I have a job where I'm an art handler, and we drive around the city all day long, so that's my favorite thing. I just drive around to take photographs, and you drive around everywhere. Well, just see
camera
stuff,
thing.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I forgot to ask you about that, because in the old days, I always saw you with the camera. Film. We're talking film days.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times I saw you with the camera.
Yeah, back when I was a tour with you. I just, I wanted to do it back then, capture.
No, but did you have a class? Or?
Yeah, I studied photography at Harbor, you know.
So along with the drawing, you also did.
Yeah, exactly, taking these classes. I have a lot of old black and white photographs. You know, we do that, develop our own film and make our prints.
Who took the picture of Pagnicons?
I did that, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It was originally for Cracks in the Sidewalk.
That's right.
You know, so.
Because there's a sidewalk, there's Jack's
hand. Jack, yeah, right. But you used something else, but I thought...
No, what happened was Chuck and Greg said, you got to use... Well, Greg said, my brother's.
Oh, right. It's Raymond's stuff.
Yeah, remember?
So that,
yeah,
yeah.
They also
that was
asked
a cool
him
cover.
To do the drawing for Minuteman, Paranoid.
That's funny thing about Raymond. I switched gears a little bit.
Because
he would draw with a brush, and I was drawing with a technical pen.
Right.
And I thought, wow, this is kind of weird. A guy drawing with a brush. I never thought of that. And he was really nice to me and told me how he went about doing his things. This is in the early times when SST was in Torrance, that Torrance place. And
The old Torrance place.
But I thought, why would someone draw with a brush? It wasn't until later that I started using a brush, and I realized that's what I really wanted to do, is more than using a technical pen. So if you see the October Faction covers,
they're all done
with this technical pen, but I don't think I would do that anymore, you know.
Right.
like the idea.
And that was a Raymond influence, huh?
Yeah, kind of in a way.
Well, that's how we got, you know, I met Raymond at the gigs, but as far as his artwork coming on board, that was totally voiced by Greg.
Yeah, right. He's my brother's stuff.
I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah, it's cool,
But his sensibility, on the other side of it, it was like, don't want to make Raymond an illustrator, right? So. But I kind of asked him, cracks in the sidewalk, so that's why that happened. You're right. Now it comes back to that photograph.
Yeah, so that became the Saturn Trust, the Pagan Icons cover.
So you must have lots of film, negatives?
Yeah, I have a lot of old black and white photographs. And I took some stuff at Jimmy Mack's studio, but unfortunately I never developed that film, so it's sitting in a box. I don't know how long film lasts. It's been... Maybe you can't develop that film. I don't know how that works. You know? It's never been taken out of the cartridge. You know, it's in those rolls.
But these things you drew and painted, that's and flyers and stuff, that is here at the show.
Right. And
so
that,
it's kind of a retrospective.
In a way, yes, it is. You know, and later I started drawing with a brush. And, traveling was a good time to draw. I'd go out, Annemiek, my wife, and I would go out and travel, and then I got into drawing when I'm in a hotel in Mexico City, wherever we go, you know.
Yeah.
Got a lot of downtime. I'll do some drawing, you know. So I got back into the drawing idea. And she's an artist, so they kind of got me going back in that direction again. And then Lori offered this show, so I just started drawing even more, you know. So I'm kind of headed that direction now. I just want to do more of that, you know. So it's kind of what I'm focusing on right now, besides music, you know.
Right, right.
But this show has a lot of that. It has newer stuff, has old stuff.
Speaking of music and drawing, you've had the problem with your hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it hurt either one?
Well, of course. Well, not for drawing, but for guitar playing it does. Yeah, I got carpal tunnel syndrome from my work, you know, because I used to make these packages for art, you know, paintings and all this kind of thing. So just that repetitive movement messed my hands up.
So it don't hurt with the drawing.
Not with the drawing.
It does hurt.
With the guitar playing.
With the guitar playing.
Yeah.
So it's hard to crack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can play single notes, but things like chords, especially the power chords and all that, I can't do that for too long. My hands start to go numb and certain things, you know, or even just regular playing, I have to stop and give it a break. I can't place as much as I used to, because the hands got all messed up. I had surgery, but, you know, it helped a bit. But,
not all the way, no.
So it's kind of like that.
And the show here at Cornelius Projects goes till December 21st?
Yeah, right.
And it's
17.
I would say on the 21st, there's going to be an amazing music performance, the Brain Children of Z-Nog. That's Vince Maroney.
That's the closing.
Yeah, it's the closing. Vince Maroney and Dan Klukas and Michael Elvedris and Brian Christopherson. They got this quartet.
Yeah.
It's sort of a free, improvised thing, and it kind of reminds me of a cross. I mean, just everything. If you're familiar with that free jazz kind of music, they're really excellent. So.
1417 South Pacific Avenue, San Pedro, California, Sunday, December 21st. You're also playing here tomorrow.
Tomorrow we have something, right.
Which is,
I don't know when you're
going to
broadcast this. Yeah, but,
who are you playing with? Ralph?
We have a little thing called Hair's Breath Ensemble. It's all acoustic.
Okay.
All acoustic. And then Ralph and Weber are going to play, too.
Right. Okay. So, if a young person asked you for advice about drawing, what would you tell them?
About a drawing? Yeah.
About drawing, as endeavor. Like an advice rock.
That's funny you mentioned that, because there's a young guy I work with and we were talking about it, and he showed me some of his drawings, and I guess individuality, I guess, is the main thing, you know.
Pursue that.
And this freedom of the expression too. I like that when people create art that way, you know. But that's just my style, so you know.
That's advice you'd give.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
Too much same old.
Right, yeah.
Bring something
new. It's just like in music.
Yeah.
You know, and it depends on what kind of art someone's doing, too. So it's kind of, what are they doing, you know? So the advice would be, you know,
kind of different.
The kind of stuff
you're doing. Some music is by yourself, but a lot of it is. Huh?
You mean
with other people. The drawn thing's kind of... like man alone.
Yeah, a lot of art. Well, that's the funny thing about when I switched to music, that was a strange thing for me, because I had been doing art.
No ensemble.
You all of a sudden, whoa, I had to talk to other guys and make decisions. Oh man, this guy wants to do that, and that guy wants that. When I was doing art, I was just making all the decisions myself. So I learned that.
So there's a little difference.
Yeah.
But there's a lot in common. I want to thank you so much for letting me come down here and talk to you, Joe.
Oh, good to see you, Mike. Thank you, man.
So many years. And so proud.
Thank you very much, man.
Roy Steeling, thank you for making this happen.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
It's been the November 16, 2013 edition of Watch for Pedro show. I got to get up to Echo Park. Keep your powder dry.